Today on Maine Calling, used cars, big trucks, tariffs, and Teslas. We discuss it all with our automotive gurus. Are you thinking about buying a new car or truck? If so, are you wondering about timing? Maybe waiting because of economic uncertainty, or buying soon because you're worried about tariffs and potential price spikes? I'm Jennifer Rooks. These are the kinds of questions many people are asking themselves right now. And automobile dealers say their sales are down. But if you need a car, you need a car. That's where today's guests come in. Today on Maine Calling, Car Talk's Jamie Page Deaton and AAA's John Paul join us to talk about cars they're excited about, the automotive industry generally, and tips for caring for your ride during pothole season. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Brooks, and this is Maine Calling. Cars are in the news these days, and it is not just about what the latest hot sellers are. There's Tesla, which has become a political lightning rod, and there are tariffs and what those mean for the auto industry. We'll talk about these issues, and we'll get answers to your questions about what to buy, what to do about repairs, and how to drive safely this season. Joining me are favorite car gurus, Jamie Page Deaton, Editor-in-Chief at CarTalk.com, and John Paul, Senior Manager of Traffic Safety and Public Affairs at AAA Northeast. We invite you to join the conversation. What are you thinking about right now? Are you thinking about an electric vehicle? Are you thinking about leasing versus buying? Are you thinking about whether or not this is a good time to buy? You send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to both of you, and thank you for being here as always. Because you are members of the automotive press, I'm going to start with the fun stuff. I know we have serious topics to discuss today, but I know that in the meantime, you have both been driving fun cars, trying them out to write about. So I'll start with you, Jamie. What have you driven recently that you're excited about?
Well, you know, please excuse the pun, but I really want to toot my own horn because I just bought a 1999 Porsche 911, and it is phenomenal. It feels so good again to drive a car that feels like a machine and not like a computer. I think that, you know, when you're driving a lot of really new cars, you kind of forget that you used to be able to, you know, feel the road and hear things, hear the engine and feel things through the steering wheel. And now so many modern cars, and don't get me wrong, they are very comfortable. They're great. You know, they're so much safer. They perform at such a high level. But, if you grew up driving a car that was a lot more mechanical, it just feels really good to be back in one of those. But I will say I am super excited about the Volkswagen ID. Buzz, which is their new electric minivan, because it looks really cool. It looks like an old VW bus, but I'm super disappointed at the range and the price, because the price is like, you know, above 60K, and the range on it is not particularly far. And as a final kind of, you know, niggling little complaint about it is the interior is not that much fun. Like, it doesn't have that sense of kind of Volkswagen retro whimsy. Like when Volkswagen brought back the Beetle, you know, they had a little flower vase in it. They made it fun. Whereas the inside of the ID. Buzz is very much a minivan, which is good and practical, but I was hoping for something, you know, just a little bit more colorful and fun with it. And frankly, you know, for a family car, I was expecting, you know, I was hoping for a price below 60K.
John, what about you? What have you driven lately that you're excited about?
I just want to comment about the ID. Buzz. Mm-hmm. There's one for sale near me, and it's $85,000. And that's just to me a ridiculous amount for that vehicle. I mean, it like Jamie says, it looks fun, but it's just I think it's just priced way too high. Right now, I'm actually driving something that's kind of fun. I'm driving the Hyundai Elantra Hybrid, and I owned a Elantra 20 some odd years ago, and the car's grown up a lot. It's got a lot more stylish, tons more tech inside of it, a lot more safety features. It's supposed to get about 50 miles per gallon average. I've been up around 60 miles per gallon. So even with a relatively small gas tank, it has almost a 600 mile range. And the performance is really quite good. And it uses, instead of like most hybrids that use some form of a continually variable transmission that doesn't really shift, this uses more of a manual automatic sort of thing, so it actually feels like it shifts when it's supposed to. I really like it, and it has pretty decent back seat room for adults. It's a pretty nice little car, and kind of at the other end of small. Recently, I drove the Chevy Traverse, and it was a front wheel drive version. It was high country, which means it's the top of the trim. Very nice inside, decent ride, great family vehicle. Still, we look at the price of all these things, and I think the Traverse was $58,000. So cars are just getting expensive, and the idea of that $20,000 to $30,000 car that was something that everybody used to buy, those are gone. People are going to be in for a little sticker shock if they go car shopping and they haven't done it in 10 years. Cars got expensive, but the new Traverse was very nice. It little 4-cylinder turbocharged engine. It did a good job. Made a little bit of noise when you were accelerating, but a fun car to drive though, and plenty of room.
John, my mom had a Traverse for years, and her grandkids referred to it as the rolling living room.
Yeah. Well, it is, and that's something that people are missing. I mean, like Jamie with her new sports car. Cars at one time were, very tactile. You really felt the road, or you didn't feel the road at all. You felt like you were going down the road on a sofa. And people miss both of those, I think.
Yeah. So we need to talk about some serious things now. And Jamie, let's talk about tariffs. John, just both of you referencing how much cars are costing today. The little bit of reading I did this morning, Jamie, most people are predicting that cars are going to get even more expensive. I saw that JD Power, is estimating $6,000 more to cars, the price of cars in the future. I know that some of the tariffs have been put on hold, but and I know that everybody's guessing. What is your feeling about what's happening next in the auto industry?
Well, I think, everybody guessing and that uncertainty is what's happening right now in the auto industry. So, we've got some tariffs that have been put on hold from Canada and Mexico, but they're going to go into effect, the Trump administration says, on April 2nd. Now, the auto industry had gotten a little bit of a reprieve from some of the steel and aluminum tariffs, but they're not going to get a reprieve from the tariffs on any products coming in from Canada and Mexico. And while that may seem like, oh, what do Canada and Mexico have to do with cars? Well, the North American vehicle supply chain runs through Canada, the US, and Mexico. A particular car part will cross the border, of all three nations several times before it makes it to, a factory in Detroit or a factory in Indiana or South Carolina where the car is actually assembled. So just because, your car says it's made in the USA does not mean that these tariffs are not going to affect its price. Because what's really going to be affected here is the suppliers. So take, for example, if you are, an axle supplier for the automotive industry, you're going to have to source steel, which is going to have, a tariff on it. And then the various components, you might send the axle first to Mexico to get some components put up, then it has to go into Canada, and then it has to come back into the US. Each time that it's crossing the border, it's going to pay a 25% tariff on the cost. And if it's crossing the border multiple times, that's really going to add up. And a lot of these suppliers, they do not have very wide profit margins. So they absolutely have to pass the cost of this on to the automakers. And then that means that it's going to get passed on, that cost is going to get passed on to the consumers. And I understand that, President Trump has said that his goal in this is to bring American manufacturing back to America, which, certainly is a good goal. But, what people need to understand is that these prices are going to go up and they're going to stay up because just if you wanted to build, any kind of factory or plant, just the permitting process, it varies from state, but from what I've read and understood and talking to people in the industry, just the permitting takes 12 to 18 months. Then you're looking at another 12 to 18 months to actually build the factory, and then another 12 to 18 months to actually get it tooled and up and running. So, and I think we've all kind of seen as well, once prices go up, that they tend to stay up. So even if the tariffs stop and manufacturing, 100% moves back to the United States, we're still going to see the price of cars increase. And it's simply because the supply chain is so integrated between the US, Canada, and Mexico. And that isn't even taking into account a lot of the electrical, and chip components that are coming from Asia. So all of these tariffs are going to basically just kind of come together and make the price of cars so much more expensive. Even if you're going for a fairly, basic car that is assembled in the United States, it's going to get really expensive.
On another very serious note, John, I want to ask you about vehicle and pedestrian safety. Here in Maine, already six pedestrian deaths because of vehicles this year. I saw an article from NPR earlier this year that the IIHS studied this and said the taller a vehicle, the more likely it's going to be in a deadly crash. Is this what you're finding too at AAA?
We're finding a combination of things, and you're absolutely right. This is pretty catastrophic. There's one pedestrian killed every 88 minutes. So, you think about, how often that happens. And one of the reasons is, the vehicles themselves. You have taller vehicles. If you get hit by a taller vehicle, you're more likely to perish in a crash. So there is that. Cars to some extent are being designed differently to try to minimize pedestrian fatalities. And also the electronics into cars today, the advanced driver assistance systems. The pedestrian detection is getting better and better all the time, but it's far from perfect. And whether it's backup pedestrian detection, so you can't see behind your car because you're parked between two SUVs or something, or there's something in your driveway. And what we try to tell people is, even with these advanced driver assistance systems and automatic emergency braking, always verify that there's nobody there. Still, don't think just because your car beeps and chirps and has a backup camera, don't think that there isn't a way that somebody could still be there. So, automatic emergency braking is great. It will slow the vehicle down. It could stop the vehicle. It can help minimize pedestrian fatalities. But going back to the price of cars a little bit, the average vehicle on the road today is over 12 years old, and the cost of vehicles today, the average, before tariffs, the average SUV was in the $52,000 to $55,000 range. So you're looking at very expensive vehicles, and how soon are they going to get replaced with the new technology? And the new technology works okay, but as you start to drive faster, when your speeds start to get above 20 or 30 miles an hour, the testing we did, now the testing is about a year old. The testing we did from 20 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour, three out of the four vehicles that we tested, and they were all late model vehicles, failed to stop for a pedestrian.
Wow.
Some of them slowed down, but they didn't come to a full stop. And slowing down is good because it does minimize the chance of crashes and or minimize the chance of fatalities. But the faster you go, the more likely that person is
So,
going to
John,
perish in a
repeat that.
crash.
What, 4 out of 5 did it stop? Three out
Three
of
out of
four did
four
not stop.
at speeds above 30 miles an hour.
Wow.
Now, so what I always like to tell people is that, all of this technology is great, but it doesn't replace a fully engaged driver behind the wheel. Your job as a driver is to drive. It isn't to glance down at your phone. It isn't to check your navigation screen. It isn't to, see what's going on in the back seat of your car, which happens a lot. Whether it's checking your kids or checking your dog, people tend to, look behind them all the time. And those are some of the things, besides texting and being on the phone, those are some of the distractions that cause some of these pedestrian fatalities. And so, best technology in the world doesn't replace a fully engaged driver. Stay fully engaged. Pay attention. Your job as the driver of the vehicle is to just drive. Not be a good host, not check your email, just drive.
Jamie, I want to circle back to the economics of tariffs a little bit and some of the other uncertainty happening in the economy right now. I saw an article in the Detroit Free Press saying that car dealerships in that state were suffering. I asked Adam Lee, who, full disclosure, is also the chairman of the board of Maine Public, but also, as most people in Maine know, owns several automobile dealerships. And Adam says, yes, sales have dropped off considerably due to the general sense of chaos in DC and the country. Consumer confidence is at a serious low. Every dealer I have spoken to says sales have dipped since Trump became president. So, Jamie, what are you hearing from the industry about how serious this is?
It's extremely serious. So when you take into account, the uncertainty, just general kind of economic uncertainty around kind of tariffs, around, unemployment, around interest rates, and then you add in consumer confidence, it's really not a great time to be a car dealer. If you look at a lot of families, who are being squeezed by inflation and they're thinking, oh, should we get a new car? And, they're grocery bill is a lot higher. Their energy bills are a lot higher. They're thinking about, well, how can we get clothes, for the new school year, et cetera. Like a newer car is going to fall further down on the list. I think a lot of people are going to say, well, let's just keep going with, what we have. Let's look into repairs. But just overall, it's interesting because normally when car sales slow, I come on here and say, like, this is the time to get a deal. Like, go on out and shop. And that really doesn't seem to be the case. Car sales are slow, but prices are not falling. And a lot of that, I think, is due to, uncertainty where, dealers and automakers are trying to bank as much as they can, as quickly as they can, to try and, to try and build up their banks before kind of the overall storm really hits. But just overall, like this is not a great time to be shopping for a car. Prices are up, and if you're a dealer, it's not a great time to be selling cars because there just aren't as many people in the market. People don't feel secure. Now, it may change. If we see, for example, the stock market recovering, if we see a lot of businesses, no longer laying people off, and we see consumer confidence going up. Yesterday the Fed signaled that they may drop rates, maybe two times this year. If all of those things come together and we don't see, massive, like say, we get a reprieve from the tariffs, that could potentially go into effect, then, we might see sales really start to pick up as people feel, more confident in making that kind of investment. Overall, sales are slow, and there's a lot of good reason for it because, even if you don't just look at the automotive industry, like if you look at the airline industry, all of the major three American airlines are cutting capacity this summer domestically because there just simply isn't demand. And so, what we're really seeing here is consumers are just closing their pocketbooks and spending on essentials only. And for most people, that means not going to get a new car.
Yeah, and here in Maine, one of the ripple effects is that the sales tax from automobile sales is a significant part of Maine revenue. So, Jamie, thank you for that. We do need to take a quick break. If you'd like to ask our car experts a question, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about cars, trucks, SUVs, and EVs. We have our automotive experts here, John Paul with AAA Northeast and Jamie Page Deaton with CarTalk.com. You can join the conversation easily. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send an email, talk@mainepublic.com. maine.org. I'm going to start here with an email from Rob. He writes, "We live off-grid and purchased two Teslas before they became political. We built solar power to reduce our impacts on the environment. We are now migrating to a different EV system fueled entirely by solar. We are no longer enjoying the Teslas, given the political ramification." I read, Jamie, this morning, we've seen about the protest at Tesla dealerships, and I read this morning that the Vancouver Auto Show said no thank you to Tesla, worried about violence.
Yeah, that, I think, you know, first of all, you know, violence is always wrong. I think it's interesting because Tesla has historically not gone to auto shows. They haven't really needed to. They haven't done, you know, press loans, and now we see them engaging in more outreach there. But what I think is particularly interesting, you know, with a lot of these Tesla drivers who are like the letter writer who no longer want the car simply because of the political association, you know, I think it's a difficult decision for people to make, right? Because if you're wanting to sell the car, all you're doing is essentially sending it on down the line and selling it now when other cars, including EVs, are a lot more expensive. That's a difficult proposition to make. But I will say we've seen, I don't know if you all have seen it up in Maine, but around where I am in DC, the newest, most popular bumper sticker for Tesla drivers is, "We bought this before we knew Elon was crazy." And then I also saw a Kia dealership is now selling bumper stickers with their EVs that say, "We bought this after we found out Elon was crazy." So it's very interesting. And I think what is particularly interesting is this impact of this kind of anti-Tesla fervor on the EV market. It looks like right now, it looks like the EV market overall is tanking. But if you take Tesla out of it, the EV market has grown 13% year over year. It's just that for so long, Tesla has had such a large share of that market that when Tesla goes down and goes down so steeply, it pulls everyone else down with it. But other automakers are, I think, really seeing some opportunities here because, you know, Tesla used to be kind of, for a lot of people, like it. You know, they were the best EV. But now a lot of people are giving, you know, Kia and Hyundai and Audi and BMW a lot of other, you know, giving them another look.
John, thoughts on Tesla and what's going on right now?
Yeah, it is sort of crazy. I mean, and Jamie's absolutely right. Used EV prices fell like 15% over the past year. And hybrids, which I've always been a fan of hybrids, only dropped, I think, less than 1%. So, yeah, that EV craze seems to have slowed down a bit. And Jamie's right. It's because Tesla took the biggest plunge, and I think it dropped, you know, 14% when the industry average sales, you know, were only off less than 1%. So there is a lot going on with EVs right now. And, you know, whether it's people stealing charging cables off of, you know, superchargers or, you know, or protests or whatever it is. It is sort of interesting. I had never been a big fan of Teslas because at the beginning, I liked the idea of a car made by a car company rather than made by a tech company. And I found the ones that I did drive, I didn't really, there were some things about them I didn't really like. As time's gone on a little bit, recently somebody I know just bought a used Tesla Model 3 with 90,000 miles on it. It's actually a pretty nice car. It's real solid. It's performing really well. But who knew that a car company or a particular model car would become so, you know, politically charged is kind of a surprise to me, at least. So
we'll go to Lewiston and Bruno. Hi, Bruno. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling to speak in defense of the WB bus. I'm an owner of a first edition. I live in Lewiston. And we have taken out for a spin. It is the coolest car ever. And I have gotten much attention from other EV drivers. I would like to say, as my second EV, it is this style of driving. It is not going to perform as a gas car. And I think that while the price tag is high, right, it is cars are supposed to be cool, and I think Volkswagen did a really good job making cars cool again.
Oh my gosh, I have to ask you, Bruno, what car is it? What color is it?
It's a green one.
Cool. And Jamie, I have a feeling Jamie would agree with your statement, cars are supposed to be cool.
Oh, 100%. And like, I've got to say, like, if I had the money to spend on one, I'd be getting one. Like, I mean, I like the way that it drives. I like it that's an EV. And, you know, Bruno is exactly right. You know, the last couple weekends at my local Cars and Coffee, the VW ID buzzes that have come have been mobbed. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's not meant to be, I guess, and, you know, probably John and I should have been clearer at the top. It's not meant to be, I don't think, a mass market car, you know, given that its looks are so much fun. And, you know, given the price tag and things, but it is undoubtedly a cool car. I wish it was cooler on the inside. I wish that design elements, you know, continued on the interior. I will say, though, what I am really excited about, as, you know, Volkswagen learns from this particular model, is, you know, Volkswagen owns the Scout brand. And so they're bringing back the Scout, which a lot of you might remember as, you know, the International Harvester Scout from late 70s, early 80s. One of, I think, the coolest cars ever made. They're bringing it back as an extended range EV hybrid. So like, that is one where I'm really, really excited about it, because in the preview pictures that they have put out, like, it looks like the aesthetics look incredible. The design looks amazing. And because it's an extended range EV where it has a gas generator on board, you don't really have, you don't have the range anxiety that you would, you know, taking the ID. Buzz on a longer road trip. So I think, you know, my hope for the VW ID. Buzz is that, you know, owners like Bruno, that they love it, that they have a great time with it. And that, for me, Volkswagen learns so that when they bring the Scout out, I can get one of those and have a good time as well.
Bruno, thanks for your call. We'll go to Lou, who's calling from Gardiner. Hi, Lou, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I own a 2000 Transit van, and driving on the turnpike 2 weeks ago, I lost all my brakes. My mechanic said that it's because the ABS module, I think that's what he said, failed, and this is a problem with Ford Transit vans. He thinks there'll be a class action. Do you know anything about this?
Wow, that sounds scary, Lou. John?
Yeah, I mean, typically, though, when a ABS module goes bad, you don't lose your brakes. You lose the anti-lock brake portion of your brakes. So I'm a little surprised you lost your brakes completely. Did they find any? And how old the Transit van? Did you say this was a 2000?
2000 with 30,000 miles on it.
Yeah. Were there any hydraulic leaks, too? Were there any, like, brake lines that were leaking or anything like that?
No, nope.
No. Yeah, it is. And I'll be honest, I didn't think they made Transit vans back in 2000. So, but as far as a class action suit, I mean, you hear about those happening all the time, but the idea of a bad module, that's something you don't see it's that often. Typically an ABS module is about $1,000. Is that what they're telling you it's going to cost to fix it?
I did make a mistake. It's a 2020. Forgive me.
Oh.
And the whole bill for the brakes and the module came to $3,300.
Yeah. So they did the brakes at the same time. And so that added some of the extra cost to it. As far as the, and this was, is this an all-wheel drive Transit or just a front-wheel drive? A rear-wheel drive.
Front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Rear-wheel.
And as far as looking at, is there a, you know, technical service bulletin that's affecting this, that type of thing? There isn't. So the idea that there's going to be a class action suit, anything's possible, I suppose, but the, you know, without something like that happening, I mean, the module itself takes a couple hours to replace. It's a $500-$600 part, looking it up right now. So Yeah, it sounds like there might have been more going on with this than just a faulty ABS control module.
And Jamie, you want to jump in as well?
Yeah, just Lou, please go to safercar.gov and register your car's VIN, because that will keep, and then you know, register your email as well. So that will let you know if there's a recall involved, and then you can get the fixes for free. And generally speaking, like, the larger recalls tend to happen ahead of the class action lawsuits.
Yeah.
So if that happens in this case, you just, I mean, and it's not just Lou, like, everybody, don't wait until your brakes give out on the parkway. Like, go every time you buy a car, register the VIN with your email at safercar.gov. That will keep you abreast of any recalls that come in. And, you know, recalls are fully covered by the manufacturer. So just make sure that you're doing that. And especially, you know, if you're having an issue with your car, make sure you get it registered, because that can keep you, you know, save you some repair bills, because it'll be covered under the recall.
And file a complaint as well, because just looking for recalls is great, but sometimes all it takes is half a dozen people with similar problems, and that's enough to start an investigation, and that investigation can lead to that recall, which can get your and you can get reimbursed for repairs too, so.
So yeah, you can not only register, but also make a complaint at safercar.gov. I do have to say, as far as I know, because I haven't checked it recently, as far as I know, that particular government website is still up and running. So it's one thing to keep in mind, but know that that's something that you can do now to raise complaints about a car that you have, and also just keep abreast of anything that might be coming down the road on it.
Lou, good luck. An email here from Melody. I have to, but don't want to, replace my 2010 Vibe soon. Can you recommend a new vehicle that is as much like the Vibe as possible? It could either be all gas or hybrid, low tech preferably, interior spaciousness, including cargo space, all very important. Also want low noise in the cabin. I'll go back to you, Jamie.
Oh, you need, first of all, I love it. Somebody has a Vibe. And for anybody who doesn't remember this car, which is totally fine if you don't, because I don't think they sold a whole lot, it's the Pontiac Vibe. It was built in the exact same factory alongside the Toyota Matrix. It just has, you know, different badging. And so what was neat about it is you got the Pontiac badge and you got the Toyota reliability, which is amazing, and which is probably why it's lasted so long. But I honestly, like, you need to go on down to the Subaru dealership. I think exactly what you're looking for is there. I mean, Subaru has you know, a gas hybrid small hatchback. They've got the larger Outback that has a ton of spaciousness. But that would be my, you know, first recommendation, is definitely be looking at the Subarus, because, you know, sadly, not a lot of automakers are making these, you know, smaller hatches. And, you know, the Vibe was kind of a crossover hatchback almost, but not quite a wagon. And so there aren't a lot of those still on the market, but Subaru's still making them. You could look at the Honda HR-V, or even, you know, even the CR-V, which is going to be a little bit bigger. So maybe not, but definitely start at Subaru, head on over to Honda. But I do, you know, I feel terrible because these are my favorite types of cars. And I was honestly devastated to hear that Volvo even is no longer going to be making wagons. So if you're looking for that kind of car, your choices are becoming more limited. So go get on down to the Subaru dealership. If you don't like what they have, then the Honda HR-V would be another good option.
Volvo's no longer going to be making wagons?
I know, talk about losing their brand identity. I'm so sad. I love a Volvo wagon.
Wow. We're going to go to Carol, who's calling from Wiscasset. Hi, Carol, go ahead.
Hi. This is for Jamie and for John. My big concern has to do with the huge screens that are now on cars, 11 by 6, and the fact that you really have to take your eyes off the road to hit certain things, to, you know, and it's just crazy, because talk about distractive, you know, your distracted driving is just terrible. And I would love to see something smaller, or frankly, I would like to see them just gotten rid of, because people are going very fast. They're using their phones, they're texting, and then now, in order to do certain things, they have to take their eyes off the road.
Carol, you are not the only person commenting on this today. John, what do you think of the big screens that have become ubiquitous in new cars?
And they're getting bigger all the time. And there's less buttons on cars than there ever was. And I absolutely miss buttons and knobs. And I'm one of the things I like about this Hyundai Elantra, it has physical buttons to change the, you know, go to the radio, go to different controls. And those are things you can sort of do, you know, by the Braille method while you're driving. You're just kind of reach over and feel around and know where it is. You can't do that with a big display screen. And the last Model 3, Tesla Model 3 that I was in, it only had one button. And that was for the emergency flashers. Everything else was done on the screen, which was super distracting. And yeah, car makers really need to consider this. When you're driving at 60 miles an hour, you take your eyes off the road for just a second. You've covered almost 90 feet. Do that for 2 or 3 seconds. You've covered the length of a football field. So the idea that car manufacturers are building distractions into cars, and as good as some of these voice control systems are, where you can, you know, tell it to change the radio station or adjust the temperature or volume. All the tests show that when you tell your car to do that, your brain shuts off for up to 6 seconds waiting for the action to actually happen. So yeah, car makers, you know, try to cram all of this technology in and these big display screens and the idea of building in distractions to cars when there's already enough distractions, just to me is a big mistake.
Carol, thanks for your call. We do need to take another quick break. If you want to join the conversation with the Car Gurus, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about cars, trucks, SUVs, and the automotive industry. Joining me today, AAA car guy John Paul and car talk expert Jamie Page Deaton. Share your questions or comments. Our email address, if you're very quick, talk@mainpublic.org. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. It appears that the lines are full, so maybe have a little bit of patience there. I want to go to this email from Kathy. Used cars are hard to find these days, and those that are 2 or 3 years old with low mileage are just as expensive as new cars. Any suggestions, especially for those of us shopping for fuel-efficient, lower-priced cars that are reliable? I think Kathy has the question of the day, Jamie. So many people in Maine in the market for something that is not going to break the bank, is fuel-efficient, but reliable.
Yeah, that is kind of the unicorn that I think a lot of people in the car market, new or used, are looking for. And what's, you know, interesting, as we see this price squeeze on the new car market, that means competition is heating up on the used car market. And that means used car prices are up as well. So it's interesting because even though used cars aren't, you know, directly impacted by supply chain issues, they're indirectly impacted because you have people kind of moving over. And then, you know, people who are going to be financing a used car really have to be careful because since interest rates overall are, you know, relatively high compared to how they've been over the last, you know, 15 to 20 years, and used interest rates on used car loans tend to be higher than interest rates on new car loans, that used car can end up costing you more than a new car over the life of, you know, the loan. But if you are having trouble finding a car that, you know, fits your budget, fits what you're looking for in terms of fuel efficiency and, you know, fits what you're looking for in terms of reliability, you're just going to have to, I think, cast a wider net. You know, in a state like Maine, you know, it's not the most populated state. That means there's going to be fewer cars simply because there are fewer people. So really make sure that you're looking around. You know, I would look around all of New England, frankly, because if it's worth it to drive 4 or 5 hours to me to save a couple of hundred or even $1,000. So I would make sure that, you know, you're looking online and, you know, sites like Car Gurus do a really good job of telling you how a car's price is set. So, you know, if it's good or, you know, bad or an excellent deal based on kind of the condition of the car, cargurus.com, they have a really good algorithm on that. And so I would just cast as large a net as you are comfortable traveling to go get that car, because, you know, I think a lot of people are really finding out that you're just not, you know, your local market may not have exactly what you're looking for. So if you cast a wider net, you might have some better luck. But really, you know, I feel for Kathy or anybody else who's in the market, just really, it's just tough out there.
We'll go to Richard calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hey, I'm looking at a 2015 Prius. I can pick it up at a pretty reasonable price because it's not running. And it might need a new hybrid battery. I've done a little research, and I've seen there are aftermarket batteries under $2,000. And part of the reasoning behind getting an aftermarket is the technology has improved quite a bit in the last 10 years for batteries. And they say that the newer ones might be better than the original Toyota hybrid battery. Any comments?
So, John, any advice? Should Richard buy this car? And if so, where does he find a battery and what kind of battery?
Well, first off, you want to make sure that is the only thing wrong with the car. That it doesn't also have a gasoline engine problem. Unfortunately, too many cars, you know, the old saying of, you know, ran when parked. There could be a lot of other things wrong with it. So you want to make sure the gasoline engine's okay, make sure that, you know, brakes are good, steering's good, air conditioning works the way it's supposed to, all those kind of things. And unfortunately, you're not going to know that until the car is actually running and functioning properly. What are they looking to get for this non-running 10-year-old Honda Toyota Prius?
Well, it's a belongs to a woman whose sister is a nun, and she knows that I do volunteer driving. And I think she's going to give it to me.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, in that case, I would look certainly at aftermarket batteries. So there's different levels of battery, though. There's new aftermarket and there's remanufactured and sort of rebuilt. So sometimes what will happen is somebody will take a Prius battery out. They'll replace the cells that are lower voltage than some of the other cells, because there's multiple cells inside an EV battery or hybrid battery, and you get a battery that's okay. And I've seen Prius batteries for as low as $800 or $900. Going with an aftermarket upgraded battery, you know, the Toyota Prius battery, you know, I'm surprised it only lasted 10 years in that car. How many miles are on the car?
A little over 100,000. But it hadn't been driven in the last over a year.
Okay. Yeah, so this sounds like it could very well be a Project Prius at the end of the day. You know, where if it hasn't been driven in a year, yeah, the battery has bricked at this point. It's not any good. You know, spending a couple thousand dollars on a replacement battery of a vehicle that you don't know the rest of the condition on is always a little bit of a gamble. Prius is a great car. I love them. I love driving them.
Great. But, well, good luck, Richard. Yeah. And I think John's going to drive up and help you out with this one. He looks excited.
Sure.
Thank you. Good luck. We're going to go. And I'm going to ask all the callers from here on in to be super quick because we have so many calls. James in Castle Hill. Go ahead.
Hello. I was thinking about buying my first new car, a Ford Maverick, and there's a year waiting period for them, and the dealer asks you to put $1,000 down, and then you wait, and there could be tariffs, and they take your $1,000 when the car comes if you don't pick it up, but they don't. Can you get them to stand by a price?
Is that possible? Can you get them to lock down a price, Jamie?
I think I wouldn't be giving money until I could lock down a price or guarantee a refund of my $1,000. And I would be going through every Ford dealer in, you know, the Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. I'd drive to Vermont. I'd drive to Connecticut in order to lock that in. The dealer should, I mean, we're hearing dealers are having slow sales. Granted, you know, you're looking at a year out, but this is locking in a sale for them. So I would kind of point that out and work with them on it. But I've got to say, James, like the Ford Maverick is just an excellent, excellent truck. I would, even if you're a little bit wary about waiting, you know, check out CarMax, see if there are any, you know, ones that are only a year or two old coming on the used market, because the Maverick, I think, is, you know, pretty much an ideal car for a lot of people. But you should be able to work with the dealer to get them to lock in a price, or if they're not going to lock in a price, make that $1,000 refundable.
All right, James, thanks for your call and good luck. Let's see, Claire here. I'm a 74-year-old woman and still cognitively intact. My car is a 10-year-old Prius, 65,000 miles, and has never given me a bit of trouble. I'm concerned with the increasing computerized interface of new cars, that when my Prius ultimately needs to be replaced, it will not be as easy for me to adapt to a dramatically different car as I will be older. Should I think about replacing it now when I can still adapt to new technology? Really kind of interesting philosophical question about thinking about yourself and aging and the car you have now. John, do you have any thoughts for Claire?
Yeah, some cars are certainly more senior friendly than others. And as I'm well into being a senior now, I guess, I look at some of those things. But there's no real reason to get overwhelmed with technology. And in the process of a road test, we always used to talk about, you know, road tests and, you know, go for a ride, see how the car performs. It's as important today to road test the technology in the car and see whether you and the technology get along okay. So I think sometimes, you know, simplicity can help in a car if you're going out shopping, and it could be something like, go look at a Kia Soul. It's a pretty basic car, and and the technology won't be overwhelming.
So do you think Claire should just hold on to her good Prius until, you know, she doesn't need it anymore? 10 years old, 65,000 miles, no hurry to get rid of it?
You know, I would hold on to it. I don't see any reason not to. It's a quality car. Typically, the Prius batteries last, you know, the traction battery lasts 15 years or so. The gasoline engine lasts a couple hundred thousand miles. If it meets all of your needs and it hasn't started to rust away, unfortunately, some of the stuff we put on the roadways can be pretty caustic to vehicles. If the car's solid, I would spend an hour's worth of labor at a local repair shop, have them totally evaluate the car, see what kind of shape it's really in. If it looks like it's in real good shape, hold on to it. Why not? It's become an old friend.
Yeah, and our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, his Prius lasted more than 300,000 miles. In fact, the odometer stopped, and he estimated it was nearly 400,000 when he finally replaced it. We're going to go to Emily from Portland. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling regarding leases. I'm in the last 6 months of a lease on a Crosstrek. This is my second lease in my life, and I just feel like it's another way to finance a car. Any advice on the current economic situation, how that's going to impact leases, and then any advice or resources for someone who doesn't talk cars to talk cars with all the salespeople?
Yes. Jamie, I'm teeing you up. Go.
I love it. I love leasing. So first, what I would do is read your lease very, very carefully. If it says that you do not have to sell the car back or return the car back to Subaru, then you can take that car and sell it. And what that means is any equity. So say it's, you know, at the beginning of your lease, and I'm just going to make up numbers. They say that, at the end of the lease, the car is going to be worth $20,000. But you go and check and you see Crosstrek prices are closer to $25,000 or $30,000. Well, you can go sell that Crosstrek, you know, sell it at CarMax, sell it to another used car place, and you can bank that, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 there. Because what's going to happen is whoever you sell the car to, they're going to pay off the lease, and then you get the equity. So if your lease allows that, because not 100% of them do, but if your lease allows that, 100% take that equity, because that belongs to you. And if you just go back to the Subaru dealership, turn it in and lease another one, the dealer's going to get that equity, and that shouldn't be the case. So sometimes when you're leasing, you know, the bet pays off and the car is worth more when it comes time to turn it in. When it comes for the next car that you're getting, though, prices are going to go up, and that means that leases are going to go up. And so I would be looking at a couple of things. One is pay a really close attention to the interest rate, which in leasing is called the money factor. Make sure that you're not getting overcharged there, because that's one area, because it's called a money factor instead of an interest rate, it can be obscured pretty easily. And you can end up paying a lot more than you would otherwise need to. So make sure your credit is in good shape. If you've got 6 months left on the lease, take those 6 months if you need to rehab your credit and really focus on that. And then when it comes to, time to lease a new car, what you really want to do is still negotiate on the price, because when you're leasing, you're only paying for basically the part of the car that you use. So if the car costs $40,000 and they're saying at the end of the lease, it's going to be worth $20,000, you're only paying for that $20,000 during the lease, that $20,000 between, 40 and 20. So if you can get the price down to say 35, then for the same car, you're only going to pay $15,000. So really negotiate. I mean, the rules for leasing are really pretty much the same for buying new. But if you are, if you're negotiating, really focus on the price, check the money factor. And again, if you're feeling like, you're having trouble talking to the dealer, if they're not giving you good service, honestly, that's my advice is always go someplace else.
There All right. That's going to be your last word and the last question for the day. Oh my gosh. Jamie Page Deaton, thank you. Editor-in-chief at cartalk.com. And John Paul, thank you. Senior manager of traffic safety and public affairs at AAA Northeast. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And tomorrow we're going to go behind the scenes at High School Quiz Show Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.